Welcome back. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. And I hope, however that time was spent, there was a quality of feeling nurtured by that time. And as I mentioned before, we'll just move right into the sit. So I invite each of us to allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And this is sort of more an energetic invitation. It can be lying down, and there's just a turning towards the nobility of these practices. Yeah, they are liberatory, and allowing there to be kind of the energetics of being awake, available, alert. Even if the body is sleepy and the mind is sleepy, right? It's sort of an angling of, okay, can we get here for ourselves? Yeah. And then with your eyes closed, kind of holding, if it feels helpful, an image of our beautiful Dharma sisterhood stretching from the Pacific Northwest down through California. And the Midwest in Chicago, New Mexico, and the East Coast, up into Eastern Canada, into Europe. There's a lot of space, yeah. Allowing yourself to take your seat in this beautiful circle, and again, feeling into the spaciousness that this circle provides. And if there's a sense of being burdened by anything, something, anything, what might it be like to almost imagine taking that off your shoulders and offering it into the center of our Sangha, where it can be met and alchemized. I do dream one day of us all being somewhere where we can be sitting around a bonfire and just offering what we feel like we might have to carry on our own to the group, to this alchemical center. For the anchor, today, I want to invite us to keep the attention in the body as we've been doing with a walking meditation in the arriving sit. And I'll often start my sits hand to the heart, hand to the belly, and just breathing into these wisdom centers of the heart and of the belly. As women, it's so important to acknowledge these wisdom centers, the knowledge of the gut, the knowledge of the heart, or rather the wisdom, let me rephrase that, the wisdom, the intuitive sense in the gut, intuitive wisdom in the heart. And how is it just in these initial moments? Again, if it feels helpful to have your hands here and just resting with your attention on meeting yourself in this way, connecting to these other centers of wisdom, not just the mind, but the heart and the belly. Feeling how with the breath, there's a rising and falling into the hands. And if it feels helpful, just this could be the meditation, sitting, if it's comfortable, resting the hands here, allowing yourself to feel held by yourself, also by the Sangha. The movement of the breath, this wind element into the hands, this earth element. And when and if the hands get tired of resting there, again, just allowing the attention to stay in the body, perhaps through this corridor the heart center and the belly. And really allowing there to be almost an angling of our attention. How is it just here in this core of our body? And the mind will do what it does and wandering off and telling stories. Some will be seductive and interesting, and some will be totally repetitive and monotonous, yet oddly seductive, right? That's just the nature of mind. Okay. And sometimes we'll go along with some thought and oh, wait, come back. Feeling into the heart center, feeling into the belly, these intuitive centers. Resting in the knowledge there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is. How is it to allow and to direct the attention to rest here in the heart center and in the belly? To listen with a sense of an open awareness to what's happening here. Again, the heart center, the belly. Having the hands here may be helpful to emphasize the anchor, so to speak. Or not, that might not work at all, in which case it's still the invitation to, can we keep the attention along the core of the body, the beating heart, the belly that may be soft, the belly that may be contracted. The heart that may be soft, the heart that may be contracted, or any other adjective. Yeah. The deeper invitation here is, can we just rest in the body, this moment, this breath, this sensation? And again, that sense of there's not never a bad sit. We just are curious. Oh, in this moment, it's like this. And if it feels true to allow there to be this sense of, I'll speak for myself, the gratitude that we can have this opportunity to sit together. So nice, as always, to sit together. And today I wanted to play around with this notion, as I pointed to in the guided meditation of, or the instructions, of how do we listen to ourselves? And this notion that within each of us is this inner committee, right? I speak about this all the time. And as we know, some of those voices are really unreliable from wherever they came from. Just those are sort of not the voices, whether it's sort of the angry teen or whatever, different parts, depending on what language or frame we want to consider this from. Just some are less trustworthy than others, which is, we can kind of know this, but the trickiness of being able to attune to and find the reliable voice, the voice of wisdom, that inner knowing, that place that I like to think kind of comes from the birthright of our innate wisdom that gets, through a myriad of causes and conditions, gets clouded over or squashed or pushed aside or exiled. And the courage that it takes to really turn towards, well, how do I really listen to that, the part of me that knows what's true, and to be guided by that. This is not a class that I was ever offered in school, and I spent a lot of years in school, but it's just not something that we really, is much part of the fabric of our world in this culture. And some of you were joining me on Monday, I will bring this piece in. There's a book called The Heart Matrix by John Pierce, I think his name is. And he did a study. I don't have the site to the study, so I always like to have the original source. I don't have it, but in the study that he talks about, scientists hooked volunteers up to a means of having the brainwaves monitored and the rhythm of the heart. So both are being monitored, and the experiment was, if it's me, I'm here in front of a screen, wires everywhere, and I have a choice. I hit a button and there'll be a lag time of 7 to 10 seconds for when an image will come, and the image is either going to be pleasant or seriously unpleasant. I don't know. I press the button, it's random. It's a randomly generated images. At a certain point, I don't think it took very long, the heart, as based upon the monitoring of when there is an agitation, so an increase in heart rate variability or a lowering, the heart could intuit, oh, this is going to be a violent image, or this is going to be seriously unpleasant. And this was outside the awareness of the volunteer. So if it's me, there's some part that's intuiting, oh, this is going to be upsetting, it's going to be seriously unpleasant. The heart responds and sort of sending signals of, like, be prepared, something bad's going to happen. Similarly, when it was a pleasant image, there was a relaxation. So there is in this experience, like, oh, there's a foreknowledge. It was anticipated. And we know this, right? When we really listen to, like, the intuitive sense, it's like, don't go down that street, or slow down, or, oh, you actually did forget to turn off the oven. Those ways where the voice does come up, and we're like, oh, right. And sometimes we listen to it, we're like, yes, I did. And when we don't listen to it, it's really at our peril, right? Those little red flags that may be waving, that we just, well, that's fine, or we dismiss. Culturally, we're kind of inclined to do dismiss those. As women, the women's intuition is really not something that's in sort of dominant culture, in the most broadest of strokes, is not something that's celebrated and something to be cultivated. In this practice, the Buddhist practice, in a way, that's kind of what we're turning towards, of how do we clear away the hindrances of the heart, the grasping, the aversion, the restlessness, the doubt, the worry, the anxiety, which all clouds our ability to actually be able to tune in and hear what's true. The standing in the reality of all things that I love, I will lose. Standing in the reality of everything that arises, passes away, right? That these are givens, that there is this inner wisdom, but wow, we can really get separated from it. We can lose that connection to it. This is by William Stafford. Ask me. Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden, and there are comings and goings for miles away that hold the stillness exactly before us. What the river says, that is what I say. And I love this notion of the visual of it's frozen, yet we know there's a current that's moving, right? There's so much busyness in our lives, and yet there is a stillness in the truth. Sort of an inverse, really, of the metaphor in the poem, but this ability to be able to sort of track both what we need to tend to, the busyness, the conversations, the this, the distractions, all of that. And, oh, wait, can we carve out the time, as we do on Thursdays, and for those of us with daily practices, to be able to say, can I settle? Get from Lao Tzu, if I can get this correct, can we wait until the mud settles, such that then the clear action can arise? But we need that settling to happen. And sometimes it's so hard, right? There's so much agitation, or there's irritation or anger or grief or fear that gets in the way of, like, yes, settling, it seems like a good idea. And no, you know, the way the leaning into numbing on phones or drugs or alcohol or shopping, or the ways that we can check out the false refuges that Tara Brach talks about. And where do we find the true refuges? Sangha, Buddha Dharma Sangha. And how do we find it internally? Those places where we are trustworthy within ourselves to rest. From Teresa of Avila, this magnificent refuge. This magnificent refuge is inside you. Enter. Shatter the darkness that shrouds the doorway. Be bold. Be humble. Put away the incense and forget the incantations they taught you. Ask no permission from the authorities. Close your eyes and follow your breath to the still place that leads to the invisible path that leads you home. I would imagine at the time, this is pretty scandalous writing, right? Ask no permission from the authorities. Put away the incense. Forget the incantations. Trust yourself. Right? Trust that invisible path that we know is there. If we allow ourselves to get still enough, to be quiet enough, so we can follow that path home, home here, home to really the truest home that we have, one that certainly accompanies us in the entirety of our life. But that ability to, again, kind of sift through what we've been taught that doesn't fit, sort of directives from above in a way from when we were young, or what we were taught in school, or expectations that don't fit, how to set that aside. And that's a really courageous, scary, unnerving, perhaps unfamiliar place to be moving from, to say, oh, wait, can I turn inside myself to find the truest refuge of my own Buddha nature, of my own truest wisdom? The Cure by Albert Hofstetler. What an awesome name is that? The Cure. We think we get over things. We don't get over things. Or say we get over the measles, but not a broken heart. We need to make that distinction. The things that become part of our experience never become less a part of our experience. How can I say that? The way to get over a life is to die. Short of that, you move with it. Let the pain be pain, not in the hope that it will vanish, but in the faith that it will fit in, find its place in the shape of things, and be then not any less pain, but true to form. Because anything natural has an inherent shape and will flow towards it. and the life is as natural as a leaf. That's what we're looking for. Not the end of a thing, but the shape of it. Wisdom is seeing the shape of your life without obliterating, getting over a single instant of it. Right? Again, pretty radical, because the kind of the common vernacular is like, well, certainly some of us were told when we were young, get over it. You know, I certainly heard that. Get over it, move on, get past it. What are you whining about? All kind of those ways that really deny, like, wait, actually, there's a pain here. There's a heartbreak. And I love this point. I'm like, yeah, no kidding. There's a heartbreak. Okay, and how do we fold that in? So with the idea of this was softening and quieting down, clearing away the hindrances that may actually serve to block or to as a sort of unskillful means of keeping the heartbreak, the pain away, the distractions of the craving, the worry, the aversions. Yeah. Because when we do clear the way from those that are preventing us from understanding the heart, there's likely to be pain there. Yeah. The heartaches that have been too hard to turn towards, the fear that's there that has been too hard to turn towards, the anger or rage that may be there that we've been so conditioned, like, oh, I can't go there. All of which is sort of needed to be able to be examined, to be looked at, to have the light of compassion shown upon it, such that from this poem, The Cure, then we can understand the shape of it. It fits into us. It fits into our lives. It fits into our narrative of who we are, the complexity of who we are. And in this invitation in the poem, there's such an invitation of a compassionate, can we turn towards the heartbreak that is part and parcel of this life and be able to understand, okay, how can we allow this to fit in, to not exile it or say there's something wrong or bad, but more, oh yeah, this happens in this life. From Christina Feldman's book, Bound the Start, which I know I quote from all the time, but she writes, human tragedy surrounds us and we are asked to bear witness, to listen deeply, to know this could be us, and to tremble in the face of suffering. It makes no sense any longer to talk about your pain or my pain, but to stand in the midst of pain and sorrow, in the midst of the pain and sorrow that we know is part of this life. That's the first noble truth. In this human realm, in this incarnation, there will be stress, there will be suffering, there will be dissatisfaction. There will be dukkha. There are causes for this dukkha. There are ways to lessen this dukkha. And then the Eightfold Path is this map of here's how we can do it. All of life asks us to find courage, to bear the unbearable, and to abandon no one. We need to find the simplest words to articulate this intention. I would add to this, to bear the unbearable, to abandon no one, also within ourselves, to sort of bear the unbearable of some of the traumas we may have lived through or the heartbreak that we may have lived through, and not to abandon ourselves, but being able to turn towards and incorporate those parts of ourselves that might be like, ooh, that's too hard to go near. I've shared this before, this image, but it's actually in that passage as well, of a painting. The paintings, there's a woman on the bank of a river, and in the river there's a child who appears to be, that the child is going to drown, is the depiction of the photo, of the painting, I'm sorry. The mother on the side of the bank, a kid in the water that looks like the kid's going to die, and the mother has no arms. And I've heard her talk about this in the image of, like, that's all of us. The helplessness that comes to the inevitable suffering of those around us. Okay, how do we brace ourselves? Not in, I don't want to see it, but brace the heart to be like, this too. Can I make space to accept and stand in the midst of the sorrow and the pain that is inevitably part of our lives, as equally as the beauty and the joy and the delight that is also part of this life? Yeah. But that a turning towards the vulnerability That is so striking in the description of that painting of the mother with no arms that can't rush in. Like, and that is part of the equanimity, teachings of equanimity. I care for you. I cannot stop you from suffering. My wishes for you will not be able to prevent you from suffering. All beings are inheritors of their own karmas. These are truths. And for ourselves, as we're able to turn towards, again, the sense of how do we anchor in our truest refuge, which I would say is the wisdom of the heart. And there's, oh shoot, I wanted to share, I don't have it. The Clearing, which is a poem I've quoted a lot from Martha Postlethwaite, but the phrasing that's so beautiful is, can I create a clearing in the dense forests of my life? And I play with the wording there. It's like, can I create a clearing in the dense busyness of my mind? Can I create a clearing around that of my heart that keeps me from being able to access the wisdom of my heart, that might, the shell that might have formed to protect, right, or to keep safe or to guard, that in so doing, unfortunately, locks us out, right? So being able to look at the ways in which we have created so much noise, whether it's in the busyness of the mind or the chatter, or an inability to easily settle the mind, or the trouble we can have in accessing the heart. The invitation to create the clearing works for all of these, right? And even for the gut too, that again, that other intelligence center where there's so much information. And again, I think it was in the Heart Matrix book, talks about the brain really being the locus of more information. It moves in and out of the heart than of the brain. Again, as measured in the heart waves. That part I'm not clear about, but I believe it to be true. And sort of the wisdom of the gut too. And again, I've said this a couple of times already, but for women to be able to really be able to become quiet enough to listen to that internal voice of wisdom and intuition. If back to the Christian's book, if compassion is to be truly immeasurable, we are asked to cultivate it in the places that feel the darkest and the most impossible. We cannot fathom or explain the brutality or cruelness or harshness that exists in this world. Explanations fail us. We act as if it's possible to bring suffering and its causes to an end, even though we know it's not possible for us to change the course of another person's mind, nor to protect all beings from harm and danger. We bear witness to such acts of violence, yet we can still set the intention to do what we can to protect all beings. That's sort of Shanti Deva's prayer. May I be the medicine and the physician for the sick. May I be the inexhaustible treasury for the destitute. May I become food and drink in a time of famine. May I be a protector for those who have no protection, a guide for travelers and a boat, a bridge, a ship for those who wish to cross over. May I be a lamp for those who seek the light. And again, this beautiful outward orientation of, may I offer this to all beings in the world. And I want to include, and to ourselves, again, the parts of ourselves that we may exile, that we don't like, that we've shunned, to be able to incorporate, call those parts home, so that when we do move in the world, we move as a whole being, that there are no parts left out. Yeah. The second music by Annie Lightheart. Now I understand that there are two melodies playing, one below the other, one easier to hear, the other lower, steady, perhaps more faithful for being less heard, yet always present. When all other things seem lively and real, this one fades, yet the notes of it touch as gently as fingertips, as the sound of the names laid over each child at birth. I want to stay in that music, without striving or cover, if the truth of our lives is what is playing. The telling is so soft. that this mortal time, this irrevocable change, becomes beautiful. I stop and stop again to hear the second music. I hear the children in the yard, a train, then birds. All that is in it and will be gone. I set my ear to it as I would to a heart. I ask you to close your eyes. Just coming back into yourself. Some words may have landed, some may have not. Okay. Feeling yourself on the chair, the cushion. And letting the mind, inviting the mind to get really quiet. Just for a couple minutes. All right. And again, as we do every week, sort of allowing perhaps the attention just to drop into the body. Holding and meeting the heart, whether it's literally putting the hands here or just allowing the attention to rest around this beautiful, radiant heart of ours. And with our hands here, again, if it's helpful, to listen for that second melody. It may be the louder, more dominant music, symphony of the mind. And can we drop below? That's image from the William Stafford's poem, there's the frozen ice, and below there is a current. There's the movement of the mind, and below it, there's another melody. The melody of the heart, the melody of intuition, the melody of inner knowing. The melody of our inner Buddha nature, where there is a luminosity to the heart qualities of loving kindness and patience and equanimity and truthfulness and wisdom and resolve, patience, joy, forgiveness. These inborn natural qualities of the heart. Can we listen to that melody? Can we attune ourselves to that melody of the natural movement of the awakened heart? The awakened heart that is its own source and center of wisdom and knowing. And how might it be to allow ourselves to move from this place? What might our posture be like if we allow ourselves to fully embody this heart wisdom, these heart qualities, this inner knowing? How might we walk in the world? When guided again by the heart wisdom, when we can feel at home in this magnificent refuge, this still place. When we can move through our lives along this invisible path that leads us continually home. Home to our own truth. and home to the wisdom of this amazing coherence of these wisdom centers of the heart, the belly, and the mind. How might it be to give yourself permission to move from here and to trust and have faith in this truth? So I'm going to stop here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.